suppose the proper procedure to get this meeting underway would be for me to introduce myself. My name is Witt. Hi, everybody. Boy, that's wonderful. Nervousness is gone right now. I am a member of the St. George's Group in Sarnia, Ontario, Canada. I'll probably hear from the other section before the meeting's over. Well, some years ago, now almost 22 years ago, I did without reservation, did what was suggested in the first step, and that was I made an admission that I was powerless over alcohol. And from that day to this, I have never looked back. I guess before introducing myself further, there are a couple of remarks that I'd like to make. And first would be to express my grateful thanks to the convention committee for the great privilege of being chairman at this Alcathon meeting. Also, it's indeed a privilege to be associated on the platform with three such dedicated members of this great and wonderful fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And each of us, in the time allotted, will share with you our personal stories relating our experiences previous to AA, what happened, and how it is now. And very simply put, we will tell you about our recovery as well as our drinking story. I think I'll digress just a minute in the opening procedure. There are possibly many here in attendance who are not familiar with just what our objectives and our certain principles are in Alcoholics Anonymous. I think to best give you what and who we are and what we're striving for would be to read to you our description of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it is, Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help other alcoholics to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contribution. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, or organization. We do not wish to engage in any controversy. We neither endorse nor oppose any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. You might ask the question, well, is this the means whereby we achieve and maintain our sobriety? I would now like to read what has been suggested to us by those who went before us in AA, and it was the outcome, the formulation of the first 100 members. They are what we call our 12 suggested steps of recovery. And if we do try to the best of our ability to abide and put into practice the certain principles that we recognize in these 12 steps, then all will be well. And the first step is, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. And two, we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And three, we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand it. Four, we made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, we admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. And six, we were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. And seven, we humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, we made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, we made direct amends wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. And 10, we continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. And 11, we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to the still suffering alcoholic and practice these principles in all our affairs. These steps have worked over the now 35 years and with tremendous results, as we all know, through the now more than 450,000 who have achieved and maintained their sobriety through the application of the certain principles incorporated in these steps. These are your speakers, but I suppose that I should identify myself to a degree, and I would say that very briefly, I was born in a small town, Ontario, and I knew what it was to have a good upbringing, four brothers and sisters, a good mother, and a kind father. I never wanted for anything. We were of a medium well-to-do family, and I attended Sunday school and church regularly as I grew up. My father was very closely identified with church. My mother was very active in church work. I say these things because later on this wasn't to be so. It was a small town, and we made our own community activities, our baseball, our hockey, and so on. By way of education, I didn't have much. I never went to high school as we recognize it in Canada. But this wasn't because I didn't want to or that I couldn't attend. It was because of the fact that there was a world war on, and I felt that it was my duty to get over there and bring this to a sudden conclusion and right things for the world, and so I absented myself from school and ran away and enlisted in the Canadian Army. I served my time in the Army, and I knew what all the hell and the heartaches and the horrors of war was. And I think that probably this was the beginning of my doubt regarding the supreme being, the God of understanding that I grew up with in my Sunday school and in my church. Time goes on, and I'm making this short. I returned from overseas, and I guess in our youth we all have ambitions. And it was my ambition to become a professional either hockey player or baseball player. And I had made somewhat of a mark in both endeavors, having played on a couple of championship hockey teams and baseball teams. And eventually I started on my way into the baseball profession. I was doing quite well and making progress, and I had visions of the big league, of course. Unfortunately, I met with a serious accident, and I was in a cast for about a year. And so my athletic endeavors came to a sudden conclusion. I continued to be associated with the organization with which I had been identified. They were very kind and good to me. But I got out of the organization and took a position with the town in which I had grown up. And eventually I tried some examinations and I entered the civil service for our Dominion government. I lacked probably an academic education, but I seemed to be one who was able to apply himself, and I was quite a deep reader, and so I think that this probably made up for my lack of education. Because from that time on, it was now looking backward for me. And it was about this time that I would have to say the most beautiful and most heartwarming event took place in my life, in that I took unto myself my childhood sweetheart. We were married and happily married, and I had everything to live for and look forward to. I was making my way in the civil service, and as I say, happily married and everything to look forward to. Eventually, I wrote some more examinations and was transferred into the city of Hamilton, and in the civil service there, there just seemed to be no stopping, and it was promotion after promotion. It was here that I began to get into the alcohol. All the time that I was overseas and in my athletic endeavors, I didn't have any alcohol whatsoever. I knew the importance of clean living if I were going to reach my objective in the sporting world. However, I began to entertain and was being entertained, and I began to take my first drink of whiskey. And I can stand here and truthfully say that I loved whiskey. I had no desire for beer whatsoever, and so this was the beginning of the rearing of the head of this allergy that we speak about and I believe in relationship to the problem of alcoholism. Well, my drinking got progressively worse as we learn and grow to understand after we come to the fellowship of AA. And I was to receive my first suspension from my work. I had a very sympathetic immediate supervisor. By now, I had one plateau to reach, and I would be at the top. And he was very sympathetic, but back in those days, there was a great, tremendous lack of understanding of the problem of alcoholism as we see it today. And so these suspensions grew closer together, and eventually I knew what was coming, and so after 19 years of service, I felt that I should withdraw my pension fund if I was to get it before I was to be discharged, and I would get nothing. In the meantime, previous to this last suspension, I'd been away, I don't know, I think it was Toronto or somewhere, I would find myself in the most dreadful situations and circumstances as a result of my drinking. I would absent myself from work, from home, and come back feeling dreadfully sorry, full of remorse and sorrow, and my dear wife would always take me in. And but eventually came the day when I returned under cover of darkness, having been away for several days, and I came back under cover of darkness to enter my home. And I found that the locks had been changed, and I did eventually get my wife to the door, and she handed me a suitcase in it was a shirt and a tie and probably a pair of socks or so. And this was the last that I was to cross that threshold into what I had visions of in my early days of being a happy, loving home. Leaving behind me a family, a little daughter of 3 years of age and a son of about 10 or 11. My daughter knew nothing, of course, of my drinking, but my son did, and as time goes on, I lost track of my daughter and so on. I was very downcast and brokenhearted over what has happened, and I found myself well acquainted with the skid roads of not only Canada, but in Chicago and Detroit and different places. And this was the sort of life that I was leading at the time that I came into AA. On one of my last drunks in Windsor, full of remorse and sorrow, nowhere to turn to and no one to turn to, I suddenly remembered that I had an aunt living in Sarnia. And as I remembered her, she was a kindly, loving soul, and I, to myself, wondered if she had heard what had happened to her favorite nephew, Whit. I went to the Salvation Army officer in Windsor and told him my story, and he said, "Yes, Whit, I can help you." And he bought me a ticket to Sarnia in order that I could make an approach to my aunt. My story is not a funny one. There were no too many funny aspects to my drinking. It was a dead serious drinking with me, and I was a desperate drunk. However, there's one incident as we sat in the bus depot in Windsor, waiting for the departure of the bus from Windsor to Sarnia, and the major sat there talking with me, and then he had to leave. And in turn, after he left, you know, the wheels start to turn. There are two ways to get to Sarnia from Windsor. One's a short way and one's a long way. And I saw that the ticket was the long way into Sarnia. So I approached the ticket seller and asked him if the ticket might be exchanged for the shorter route. And he said, "Oh, yes, there's no problem here." So he took my ticket and stamped up another one and gave me the short way over through Detroit and down to Port Huron. And I stood at the wicket looking at him, and he stood looking at me, and I said, "Well, isn't there a difference in the fare?" And he said, "Oh, yes, but I'll see that the major gets it." So out the window goes a few beers. By now I'm drinking anything. And so it was that I arrived in Sarnia this fall. It was raining, cold, dreary, dismal. I had a light windbreaker on and a pair of khaki pants and, as I recall it, a pair of scuffy old shoes. I debated as to whether I would go to my aunt. I think I had about a dime in my pocket. Make a phone call and go to my aunt, or whether I should go into the Vendome Hotel, which is right at the top of the ferry dock hill as you come off the ferry and enter the city of Sarnia from Port Huron. Well, the neon lights went out, and I found myself casing the joint of the Vendome Hotel, and I was pretty good by now at casing these places, and I saw three or four fellas sitting at the table, and I thought they looked pretty good to me for a little touch. And so I went over and begged their pardon and asked if I might sit down, and they said, "Oh, yeah, sure, come on, sit down." And I began this fantastic tale about I was an author and a writer, and I was seeking material for a book, and this was the reason for my attire, and I was living with the rubby dubs and so on, and I was going to autograph a copy of this book for these fellows, and boy, the beers, did they ever start to come. So, well, the shutters came down, and I found myself lonely and alone, and no place to turn to and no one to turn to, standing out on Front Street on this cold and dreary night in Sarnia. I couldn't possibly face my aunt now, so I sought out the only companionship that I knew by now, and I found myself wandering along the waterfront, and I did come to the Tin Shack. And here were the friends that I knew now for the past 5 or 6 years. These were the Rubs, these were the boys that knew the Mixes, and they took me in and protected me for several months until I was found by my aunt and her daughter, Helen, God bless her. And I was taken from the shack into my aunt's home, and here for the first time in probably 2 or 3 years, I was to be bathed, and I slept in clean linen, and I was fed, just almost like the prodigal son coming home. And so for the first time I was beginning to eat, and through Helen and a friend of hers, I got work at 50 cents an hour, backbreaking work in a block plant. And I was so determined that I was going to make good at this particular work. I continued for about 3 months at the block plant, and Paul, the owner of the block plant, he took me from there into the warehouse, and I seemed to make progress again. I could apply myself, and I was beginning to buy my clothes again and look respectable and beginning to hold my head up high. I went on buying expeditions for Paul into Toronto, buying builder supplies and so on, and things went well for quite some time. But when we come to AA, we hear the wisdom of those who went before. And as was said tonight by Marty, it's not the fifth or the tenth drink that does the harm, it's the first one. And so I found myself in the cocktail lounge at the Royal York Hotel, and the first time it was all right. I got the train and back to Sarnia. But this second or third time it was all right too, but eventually it struck. And I would call Sarnia and make the excuses of this and that and the other thing. And this particular night, I knew I was beaten, I was done. Alcohol had me again, right by the throat. So I called Helen and I called Paul and said, I'm all through. Just forget about me. I'm just a drunk. No good. And so on. But this wasn't to be. And so Helen and Paul came to Toronto from Sarnia, a distance of a couple of hundred miles, and got me out of the Royal York Hotel and took me home. I remember so well that this was a Wednesday night. And great things happen, you know. Coincidence, miracles, but they do happen. And as I sat on my bed that particular Wednesday morning, now, as I say, nearly 22 years ago, my aunt came into my bedroom, and I was sitting on the side of the bed, shaking, crying, sobbing, knowing full well that it was all over. I was done. I was just no good, down and out, drunk. My aunt had a paper in her hand, and she began to relate to me the story of the wonders being performed by a certain man in London, Ontario, through an organization called Alcoholics Anonymous. It didn't give his name, but she asked me if they could find out who this man was, would I talk with him? I said, please, Aunt Lot, by all means, try. And so I was to meet the man who was to become my sponsor the following Sunday. And I shook and heaved. I had the hots and the colds from that Wednesday until Sunday, when I was to come face to face with the man who was to become my sponsor. And he is still an active man in AA. And I don't think there's ever a night that I put my head down on my pillow but what I don't say thanks to the sponsorship that I received through Fred in AA. I can't stress too strongly the importance of sponsorship in relationship to our fellowship of AA. Now, my time is running out, but very briefly, I came into AA there in London, and Fred was a wonderful sponsor. He would drive the 65 miles from London to see me in Sarnia, and I would attend meetings in London. And many of you from Detroit who attended the old Maccabee building, or meetings, Maccabee group in the Maccabee building on Saturday night, I would wheel down there every Saturday night. Helen would drive me down. And I would hang on to the coattails of Archie, Tommy was there, and Bill, and Mike, and so many of these fellows. The old-timers, they called them in AA. I hung on every word. I hung on their coattails. And God bless them, they showed me the way. And thank God, I have maintained what I have learned from those who went before. And I hope that I may continue to be of help to those who are yet to come. My time is up. And so, to begin with, our first speaker on this wonderful panel is Charlie D. from Flint, Michigan. Some call him Charlie, some call him Charles. He's elevated now. He guess it's Charles. And he is the outgoing delegate for Michigan Central to our General Service Conference in New York. Without any further introduction for me, it's a pleasure for me to present to you Charles D. of Flint, Michigan.
Hi, everybody. I am Charles D., and I am an alcoholic. You know, my good friend from Sarnia make me feel like the old maid who said she felt bad even when she felt good because tomorrow she's going to feel worse. Now you can see how the alcoholics is. I think the man from Sarnia also showed you about the dual disease that we have here. And you know about the first one, the alcohol, and the second one is verbal diarrhea and mental constipation. You know, I'm very grateful to be in Miami, Florida, and I think that is the degrading thing for me. When I left home, I told them I was going down to Miami. It ain't none of Miami, it's Miami to me. You know, as I was riding down Collins Avenue and I looked at all of the wonderful structures and edifices there, and the first thing came to mind, I said, wouldn't this make a wonderful ghetto? I know most of you heard Marty tonight, some of the authorities on alcoholism. You heard about Dr. Jelinek, Dr. Block, and Dr. Bell, and you heard their theories. But Charlie has a theory of his own, and that is alcoholism is a system of adultery perpetuated by an intimate relationship between sincere ignorance and conscientious stupidity. Now, as I tell you about people like me who is not in the statistics of alcoholism, I happen to be half Jew and half Negro. I never resented this but one time in my life, and that is when I was taking genetics in school, and I found out that the XY gene dominated the Y genes, and this was the determining factor whether you're going to be a boy or a girl. And having a mathematical mind, I knew good and well that there's no such thing as I was taught about this 50-50 business. And being mathematically inclined, I decided that I would give it the benefit of the doubt by saying that I was 49% Jew and 51% Negro. So I wouldn't expose this to my student body, and I went to my dad, and I said, "Dad, am I 49% Jew and 51% Negro?" He put up his defenses right away, and he said, "What difference does it make?" I say, "It makes a hell of a lot of difference." He said, "Like what?" I said, "So a little boy down the street want to sell his bicycle for $20, and I don't know whether to Jew him down or go back tonight and steal it." I took my first drink, coming from the same type of family my friend came from, and alcohol did everything that I wanted it to do. I was happy for the first time in my life. I could relate to other people. I felt equal, and I could express myself. But 22 years later, alcohol did everything I didn't want it to do. Sick. You know, I hear about these alcoholics, some of them throw up and some heave. But I was a different type of drunk. I was the puking type, you know. Tried every facility, transitional facility, transitional analysis, and all of this to try to get well. And one of the most disgraceful things that ever happened to me, I came into this wonderful fellowship at the age of 38 with diaper rash. Prior to my introduction at AA, I went to the psychiatrist. I had been committed to psycho ward 4 times, and I went to the experts, and I went to the leaders. And I don't go for none of these fellows, because the psychiatrist will tell you exactly what's wrong with you, but he'll say it in words you'll never understand. And we have found out in the last 3 presidents of the United States what a good leader is. A leader is a man that will not allow his followers to know that he's just as dumb as they are. And Dr. Bob told us long years ago to keep it simple and don't louse it up. And that expert will tell you tomorrow what he said yesterday, the reason it doesn't happen today. That is really loused up. But after puking and heaving all across North America and down Central America and into Europe, and sometime I had my foot on the thresholds of Asia, and I found out I've come up with no answer until I came to AA. And I came to AA, and they gave me the 12 basic principles of life. And they started off just like the young fellow from Sarnia. And the first step is said we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives had become unmanageable. I had this as an individual program. And when I looked at this and they told me and gave me my guidelines, I found out that I had a problem before I ever knew what alcohol was. Alcohol only magnified and intensified the problem. And the psychiatrist told me that I was a spoiled brat. And when I drank, I was more so. So therefore, I think the criterion of my success is to find out how to manage my life. Then I was inclined to go down to the second step where it said came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Well, I didn't believe in anything until I came to you good people. And I believe that if I would associate myself with you people, that I would become a reflection of you people. And this has become increasingly so each day of my life in the last 13 years. Now, it said something about a power greater. It didn't say nothing about a greater power. And the power was people. So a lot of power was in people. So therefore, I had to come up with a good relationship with people. Then it said sanity. What is sanity? And the best way for me to measure measure sanity is by the four absolutes: honesty, purity, unselfishness, and love. I don't know nothing about this, but this was a good start. And when I was able to adhere to the second step, I came down to the third step, where it said, made a decision to turn our wills and our lives over to care of God as we understood Him. I went up there and I found out that I was paralyzed indecisively. I could not make decisions. And just to give you a brief example, when you have been drunk for 22 days, then you got a big football in your stomach and you haven't eaten one meal in 22 days, and here you go to the bathroom and you're trying to decide what end to put down first. You know? This is indecisive. Then it said, turn your will and your life over to care of God. And I have been fortunate than most people. I have been a member of five denominations. And unfortunately, I ended up to be Catholic, San Franciscan at that. But no one could tell me what life and will was. And I found out through AA. Life and will is thoughts and actions. I know today that my thoughts is the mother of my acts. And if I think good, the result's going to be good. If I think bad, the result's going to be bad. And if I don't think nothing, ain't nothing going to happen. The latter part let me off the hook, you know, and as God as we understand Him. And I believe that this is a principle of life. Because in my drinking day, I don't know anything about principles. So therefore, I turn my life and will over to a principle of life. Then I'm able to take the fourth step. And the fourth step said, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. And I found out here that I must seek the best for me. My inventory is nothing that I have ever done. Today is the beginning of the rest of my life. And I think here is where I take stock of the commodities on hand. And I know now that I have the ability, after making an appeal to God, an appeal to my conscience, to my intellect, and to my imagination. These are the things that's going to guide me through life. So therefore, my inventory is seek the bestest for Charlie. I've been trying to live like everybody else wanted me to live, and I was unsuccessful, confused, frustrated, vacillated, and anything negative connected with it. So I was never in touch with me, and this is what AA is trying to do, put me in touch with myself. So therefore, when doing this, I found out I had to do it through my fellow man. As Thomas Merton said, no man is an island. So therefore, I must connect myself with people. And the two greatest commandments tell me this, well, the second commandment tells me this, is to love thy neighbor as thyself. And this let me know I must learn something about my neighbor. And in doing so, I found out that the fifth step led me into this. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact natures of our wrong. First, it said admitted to God. I am admitting to this principle of life. Then it said admitted to myself. I found out there's nothing going to happen to Charlie unless I make it happen. Now, my mother used to tell me to pray. And I used to get down on my knees, and I used to almost come up with bursitis praying for a Coupe de Ville blue convertible Cadillac with all insects. I almost became paralyzed to the point that I wouldn't have been able to operate it if God had given it to me. But you know, since I came in AA and I make those 40 hours and I got me a good reference at the banks now, and I finally bought me one of those big cars. And I'm glad God didn't give me that car. Because this inclement weather we have around Michigan there, I'm ordained to be lazy. So therefore, I wouldn't have washed them, you know. You wouldn't have known whether it was baby blue or no. And now all I have to do is pray and I'll get another one anyway. So therefore, I'd have had about 12 Cadillacs in the car, in the back of the yard there, you know. But you know, when I bought that big car, I'm paying a $168 note a month on it. You know, 36 of them things to pay. Last winter, my wife would verify this. I'm out there with some lukewarm water with my tide in it, and I'm out there baptizing it in zero weather. You know? The This is gratitude. Then the third part of this step said to another human being, now I know today, I've said this for 13 years, although I'm a Catholic, but honest confession is good for the soul, but it's bad for the reputation. So I believe, as Marty was saying, that communication is the key, and communication bring on understanding. And understanding, we can express ourselves. And if I express myself, then you know just about how to deal with me. But man, I know today that the way my mother was telling me about this God, that he must have been residing behind the sun somewhere, 93 million miles away. And as mean as my mother was, she would have beat the hell out of me before I could get the message to him in the first place. So now I know that I have to communicate with people. Now, I've been in AA for 13 years, and no one has told me the exact natures of my wrong. Not even the old-timer. I heard the fellow from Sarnia overemphasize the old-timer. And man, these people are parasites. But, you know, they'll go up there and we don't do it like Bill did it in 1934 and 1935. I said, man, what in the hell are you talking about? We have had a man on the moon since then, you know. So we better adjust to the time. Well, now I know now that the exact natures of my wrongs is the inherent tendencies that seems to control my conduct. I was a very frustrated, confused person at all times, 24 hours a day. And you couldn't get even Nipsey Russell or Dick Gregory to make Charlie laugh. Man, I've had a complete frown on the world. Well, I knew when I came in AA and I talked to my AA people and all of that, I decided that I'm going to get rid of these character defects. And that's what the sixth step told me. Entirely ready to get rid of all of my character defects. Well, these character defects was the thing that was controlling my life. So I got to get rid of them because I knew now that it only strangled all of the best that was in me. So what is a character defect? A character defect, as Elsie was saying some time ago in Texas, that it is a characteristic that I was endowed with that I, with my selfish self, seemed to abuse. In other words, this is an unresolved discontentment. And I know now that you can't love and hate at the same time. You cannot straddle the fence. You got to do one of the two. So therefore, I know what a character defect is. Then step seven said, humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. I went up there and the first word there was humble. What is humility? Humility is the ability to accept myself as I really am. And I tried to be everything but Charlie. And my wife used to ask those silly questions. She said, Charlie, what would you do if you was Rockefeller? I said, hell, I never thought of it, but I wonder what he would do if he was Charlie. You know? Well, I tried to run competition with him at one time, and I thought I was becoming a millionaire, and I found out I would never make it. So therefore, I had to accept myself as I really am. Then it said shortcoming. What is a shortcoming? A shortcoming is not living up to a reasonable expectation. That is by me. Not with my mother. My mother wanted me to be a minister. My dad wanted me to be a doctor. And the people in the community, I don't know what they wanted me to be. But I didn't end up being none of the things that they wanted me to be. And I'm glad I didn't. Because I've seen some of those doctors puke just like Charlie did, you know. So therefore, I'm in the best position if I can seek the best qualities in myself and cultivate them and implement them into my life 24 hours. So therefore, my shortcoming is not living up to a reasonable expectation. Then it came down to the eighth step where it said, made amends to all people be at home and willing to make amends to them all. It didn't say nothing about apologies, restitution, and all of this. And if I have made an appeal to God, knowing that God only asked me one thing, he said, Charlie, get your life in order today. He didn't say nothing about getting my life in order 25 years ago. This would have been stupid in the first place. So The Lord's Prayer tells us this. Give us this day our daily bread. Didn't say nothing about no yesterdays nor tomorrows. And so whatever's been done in the past, you can't undo it. And you haven't reached the future yet. So the best you can do is now. Right now is the beginning of the rest of my life. Now. So therefore, I must relieve me of all the corruptible things that have happened over the 30 years that I lived prior to AA. Then amends mean change. And you don't know by bringing up some of these rotten escapades that happened 10 years ago, the person you telling it to may take it in the wrong way. So therefore, you will mess your own self up, you know. So therefore, we have the ninth step where it said, made amends whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. And I tell you here, ladies and gentlemen, you better let sleeping dogs lie. The reason I know this, I let my friends make the mistakes for me. I had a good friend that stayed on the pier road, and he got too honest. You know, he went up there and told his wife about some of the rotten escapades that he had gone on about 10 years ago, and that was about 4 years ago, and had 3 children, and from that day to this one, he haven't had the privilege of sleeping with that woman since. You know? So therefore, you, when you start exposing something in the past, you better duck. Because you may be the one you hit, you know, kind of like Marty said. Take that sledgehammer and beat your own brains out. So therefore, now is the beginning of the rest of my life. Then I come down to the 10th step. And the 10th step said, continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. I'll guarantee you that any alcoholic that started having any difficulty, you better do something about it now. Don't put it off. Procrastination will strangle you to death. And you cannot rationalize. I know that rationalization is one of the worst defects that we have. And I'll say for the men, what is rationalization? And we don't go to Funkin' Wagner or Thorndike or Webster. Rationalization is coming up with a social accepted answer for unsocial accepted behavior. I know about that, trying to get the wife off your back, you know, and you go to the extravagance, buying the fur coats and all of this. And I'm a past master at that, because as soon as she receives it and the excitement of it is over, you're still in the same position, only you're about $400 more dollars in debt, you know. So when something goes wrong, correct it then. Then when we can do this, then we can go down to the 11th step where it says, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood it, praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. First it said, seek. And I'm a firm believer in my good friend Eddie Cochran from California, who said that if a person come in to AA today and next week he up there 12-stepping, I guarantee you, as long as you do it this way, you're only spreading the disease. You ain't helping nobody. You don't know nothing. So therefore, we must learn something, and it tells us to seek. And as long as we seek and learn something through new experiences, then we can relate something. Next it said prayer. And I'm only giving you my concept. Prayer is only a neutralizer. And I'll take one of the greatest men that ever walked this earth and prove to you that it only neutralized the mind, because when he went out into the wilderness 40 days and 40 nights praying, it didn't change Caesar, Herod, Pilate, none of them's idea. And he knew what he was faced with. And after he went there on the 41st day, he made his appearance, and the disciples decided, they say, anyone defy your word, we're going to chop the head off. And this was Peter. And Peter did clip one's ear. And if you remember what the Bible said, it said, put up the sword. He that liveth by the sword will suffer by the sword. And if you interpret that correctly, you will find out if Peter had done what he wanted to do, it would have been 13 people crucified that day. So we got out with the less. And only neutralize the mind that we will face our convictions, and nothing, the threat of life, will not change our attitude to what we believe in. Then it said meditate. And meditate, this is where God has endowed you with one of the greatest assets. known to any being, the ability to reason and think. We are not supposed to follow a hood. We have the ability to reason and think. You know, and this sounds something like my wife, you know, the fella across the street from us. He'll come up there and come home, and man, his wife's just embrace him and all of that and kiss him, you know, as he entered the door. And my wife said, "Charlie, how come you don't do that?" I said, "Honey, I don't know that woman that well." So we better learn to use our thinking in a positive way. And at this point, I know now that my wife loves me, and I don't blame her one bit. When I'm able to take the 11th step, I'm ready to go down to the 12th step, where it says, after having had a spiritual experience as a result of these steps, we try to carry the message to the alcoholic and practice these principles in all our affairs. First, it said spiritual experience, and I didn't have nothing like Bill. If I had, I would have died from heart shock. And I never heard no voices, you know, speaking. But when I decided to reorganize my life as it would be fruitful, creative, and productive, this was my spiritual experience. Now, going to the alcoholic, it said carry the message, not the alcoholic. Carry the message. So that's all I do. And we got a 12-step house there, and we carry them down there because I paid about $1,800 for some new carpeting. And I don't want no drunk at my house puking up on that stuff, you know. So I carry the message at the most convenient place. Then the last seven words is the most important part of the AA program. Practice these principles in all our affairs. And ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to take the last few minutes just to tell you what has happened to Charlie. I came into AA and I could sit on a dime and tell it whether it was head or tails or no. I was just about naked. As a result of practicing the principles, I have had many assets. 2 years ago, I was elected the first world delegate, the first one they had in history. And I happen to be the delegate from Central Michigan in the area council. And people like you is the one that put me in this position because I didn't think I was qualified. I've been a union representative. I've been asked to come to the church and speak. I've been asked to go to the universities to speak, the schools. And I have 64 allotines that I've been dealing with for 4 years. And these parents... And one thing about it, these parents would let Charlie take them anywhere across the line without them being present. And one night I took them out of town there and... the parents let me have full cars and gassed them up. And they weren't even present. They let me take them with me. And I told my wife, after coming back on that first trip, I said, "Honey, 50 cents, one drink will destroy every bit of this." So, ladies and gentlemen, in conclusion, I will say that the one that doubts what AA can do, I've said this for 13 years, be like the banana. Stick to the bunch. If you get away from the bunch, you're going to really get peeled. Thank you.
Express your appreciation after a talk like that. It was so nice to hear Charlie talk a bit about the puking drunk, because you don't hear about this fella too much in AA these days, but some years ago you used to hear about the puking drunk. So Charlie, thanks very much. Our next speaker is from Kentucky. Bonnie L. She, as I said in my opening remarks, is one of those dedicated members of AA. She has lent herself without reservation to the trying to carry this message that Charlie spoke so beautifully about in the 12th step. We don't look at it in terms of success, but I understand that she has had great success in trying to carry this message of help and hope to the still suffering alcoholic. So it's a pleasure to present to you now Bonnie L. from Kentucky.
My name is Bonnie, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi. It's so good to be here, I think. But you know, I have to remind myself that only in AA could I travel in such fast company. And when I was first asked to speak here, I know many of you know the mixed emotions that we experience when we are asked to serve in this capacity. I was at once thrilled and horrified. And then it reminded me that, Bonnie, today you can stand up and be counted. You no longer have to cringe when you are called upon. And it is only through the blessed healing medicine of Alcoholics Anonymous that I can do this. I was born in Germany, Trier, Germany. My parents were born in Essen. And my husband told me today that there's a girl here from Essen, and I hope I can meet her before I go home. I came to this country when I was 8 years old. And one of the reasons is important to my story, because when I came into AA, I was told that I would have to change, and I had to find out what made Bonnie tick and what I would have to change. And prior to the time when I came to this country, I had a very normal life. But the Bonnie that was become a raving maniac, a screaming, puking, alcoholic. One of the old-time hopeless alcoholics. I had to find out what there was I had to change. And the things that happened to me when I first came to this country were the things that formed everything that was wrong with my way of thinking. And Marty put it so well, as you mentioned, many things, but what she particularly put well was the magic of alcohol. Because I had a miserable childhood here, because from that time on, I was on the outside looking in before I ever had a drink of alcohol. And I was never again to feel anything but loneliness and rejection until I found my home in AA. So that for me, I almost had to be an alcoholic to live the life I am today, and to have been given the grace, as I've heard it phrased so beautifully at this conference, to become a member of this fellowship. I am one of the very grateful alcoholics. I have so far been able to always feel this gratitude right to my tippy toes. And I have seen unfortunate members lose it, and I hope I never do, because I like the feeling. The girl that was so confused by this country and by what happened to me here had been around alcohol, beer, of course, being a German, and my father made wine, And so it was always a part of our culture and our way of living. And I had some religion to rely on as a lonely child when my parents divorced. The only two people in this country that were dear to me could not get along. So therefore, as a child of divorce and rejected by the people I wanted to accept me so much, I found alcohol. And like Marty said, it was magic for me. For the first time since I had been here, I again belonged in a group. And as Charlie said, it gave me everything I wanted. The glitter and being a part of and being the things I wanted to be and being the days of the movie stars, naturally I wanted to be a movie star and I wanted to dance like Ginger Rogers and I wanted a partner like Fred Astaire. And to me, in the beginning, as everything I know and have learned, I have learned here. And so I am only expressing what you have taught me in relationship to myself. Everything I heard won't do me any good unless I apply it to me. So that when this magic entered my life and gave me everything I wanted, naturally, I could not understand when it turned on me. I married very young, and I was lucky, or as I now know, God was already watching over me, because he gave me a husband and a man that was to know what it is like to live with a practicing alcoholic, to see a person become something very unlovely. I think the symptoms of alcoholism are the most wretched of any illness. No wonder there is such a stigma, and has been for so long, to alcoholism. And so many people are having a time understanding it. God knows I had a hard time understanding it. And I really don't think I do today. I only accept what I have learned because it fit me. I am hoping that I can express a little bit what I have learned and what I was, because I am one of the serious ones. I am so glad you had Charlie, because he gives it to us in a light vein, but with an awful wallop. And this is the way I learn best, really. I am just here to show you that even for grim drinkers like me, who had a long, hard road of alcoholism, whose family suffered it with me, can also be here and be counted. AA gave me my life. Al-Anon gave me back my marriage. Alateen gave me back my children. I can talk to you for a long time how I drank, what I drank, and how much I drank. It really isn't that important, other than I did anything, everything, and I would sell my soul for a drink. And that says pretty much everything. I became a gin drinker. That dates me a little bit. Vodka was not so popular yet. So I was a good, hard, confirmed gin drinker. And the wonders of drinking, when I first came into AA, I said I was a social drinker. You taught me I was not. My dependency on alcohol began with my first drink. And as I say, the road I traveled, I did not travel alone. I used to think I did. Nobody got hurt but me. Al-Anon taught me differently. Alateen taught me the suffering. I knew the suffering of my children through hearing other children express what happened to them. And I am still trying to become the mother. I cannot do anything. You help me with my guilt. And I am trying to help other mothers that come in with their guilt in relation to their children and to their husbands or wives. Therefore, all I can do is today be the best wife, mother, and grandmother that I know how. And by walking that, trying to do my best today, as you put so well, Charlie, the now, that ensures that maybe tomorrow I will be better. I like to remember my last drunk. I think possibly I have time to tell you how AA was given to us. We were completely bankrupt as a family. My husband likes to say he saw an advertisement in a magazine, a full-page ad that said, "A family on the rocks." This was us. We had suffered as only an alcoholic family can suffer. And this is where we later learned God took a hand in our lives. And one of the many times that my husband had to leave town, he was a salesman at that time, and was away from home a good deal. And one of the many times he could not leave home and leave me with the children in the condition I was in. So he had to put me somewhere for my own protection and for theirs. And in the Sunday newspaper, there was a very small advertisement among four pages of advertisements. And it reminds me a little of Bill's experience with his calling on that fateful day. Because why did Paul see that one little advertisement? Because he was meant to. And it was a rest home, one of many. We no longer went to hospitals or psychiatrists. We had tried all the routes that so many of us try in our desperate seeking an answer. And so, in this little rest home, in a little town in Ohio, as Paul is very quick to say, he had learned that if he bought a pint, I would follow it. And so he did. And he took me to this rest home, and there was a member of AA. And for the first time, Bonnie met someone that knew how I felt. And that as I went through my normal convulsions, hallucinations, and all the horrors of withdrawal that I had faced so many times, but it never once deterred me from taking that first drink the next time. This member of AA sat next to my bed and talked as only an AA member can talk. And for the first time in many years, Bonnie found hope. This woman that had been declared hopeless by her priest, by her psychiatrist, by our family doctor, and God love them, they tried, but they didn't know the answer either. And I think they just couldn't bear to look at me anymore with that question in my eyes. What is the answer? Give me an answer. What am I going to do? They didn't know that this little fellow in this little rest home in Ohio, he knew. He had my answer. And Bonnie started the very slow process of putting herself together. It took 6 years from that date in 1952 for Bonnie to reach her sobriety date, which is August 20th, 1958. And from that day on, I haven't found it necessary to take a drink. And that last drinking bout, my members in my group told me to keep green for my own protection, and I have. I have not forgotten that last drunk, because it was at that time that I was able to surrender completely to this program and allow you to help me. One of my greatest stumbling blocks in being able to use this program was that my false pride always got in my way. There was a wall between me and you. And as we have heard this weekend, this ability to communicate with the language of the heart has to be open and free. It cannot be one way. And I now know all its full pleasure when I meet you and my door is open, it flows. And this I have been given by you. Everything I am today has been through the grace of God, through you, to me. And I am now walking my one day at a time with you along the road of happy sobriety. We have not had an easy time of it. And for Bonnie, it couldn't be easy, and I don't think for you either. I have never appreciated anything I didn't earn, and Charlie brought that out so well with the car. The things that I prayed for, if I had been given them, I wouldn't have valued then. Now I am able to value everything that is not material, that I did not know existed before my coming into AA. So all I have is a litany of love. The love that was trapped within me all the many years, as is within all of us, crying to get out. You released it for me. And I hope forever after, this love will flow between us, that Bonnie never gets in the way again. Or if I do, and when I do, that my group will see it and help me. I am not going to go on, because I know all of you want to hear Chuck, and you know I'm grateful. And I'm so happy tonight. A man came in here tonight that has seen me drunk. And this is wonderful, because I am living now in an area where they've never seen me drunk. And sometimes they'll look at me and they'll say, Bonnie, you never had a drink, did you? Just see Jack. He'll tell you all about it. And you know, this is good for me. I like it. They know me as I am. They keep me in line, these lovely people that have seen me grit my teeth, do what I don't want to do, and be rewarded. This is fantastic. You know, I don't believe it yet. And I want to keep this feeling of awareness and awe and gladness. And thank all of you for making me what I am today. God bless.
Bonnie, so much. I think Bonnie brought out very forcefully the importance of communication. I think it is in the giving that we do receive. Bonnie was one of the very fortunate ones in that she was reunited with her family, her children, her loved ones. This didn't happen to me. In my story, I mentioned that I had left behind a 3-year-old daughter. I had lost track of her for many years. I guess it was about 35 years from that time until I found her in California. One of those who was so kind to me at that time in my search and in endeavoring to locate my daughter, I knew that she was in California, and our next speaker was extremely kind and considerate in his help to me at that particular time. I found my daughter in the Order of St. Joseph, where she had become a sister of that order. And it was in my capacity as chairman of the advisory committee of the International Convention in Toronto in 1965 that it took me to California at my own expense to sort of promote a little for the International Convention. And again, our next speaker, Chuck, was so kind to me, and I shall be ever grateful to Chuck for what he meant to me and what he has meant to my daughter indirectly, too. So